Hi, I'm Mike Sainsbury and welcome to this ASI cast. Paul Kennedy, Research Director of RAJAR, interviews Alison Winter, the BBC's Head of Audiences for Radio, and starts by wondering why the BBC produces podcasts. By the end of a fascinating interview, we all have a very good idea why the broadcaster does so and why their popularity continues to grow. Paul.
Hello there. I'm Paul Kennedy, the Research Director at RAJAR, which is the UK's radio measurement service, and I'll also be chairing the upcoming session on electronic measurement at the ASI conference in Venice. Today I'm interviewing Alison Winter, the BBC's Head of Radio and Music Audiences. However, we're not going to be talking about radio or music, but instead about podcasts and podcasting. So Alison, why does the BBC produce podcasts?
Well, first of all, as a bit of historical context to that question, we've actually been producing podcasts for some time now, for just over 10 years, in fact. And the BBC was the first British broadcaster to podcast when we made three programmes available back in 2004 as part of what was then a podcast trial. And the programmes we chose at the time were quite an intellectual heavyweight from Radio 4 called In Our Time, a more conversational show from Five Live, which was called Fighting Talk, and one that I don't think exists anymore called TX Unlimited. And that was a speech programme from One Extra, which is our digital urban music service. And across the 4 months of the trial, those programmes were downloaded a total of 270,000 times, which gave everyone the confidence to expand the trial, and it moved on to look at 20 programmes next year. And nowadays, if you think back to what that had been, about 68,000 downloads a month, nowadays we're looking at monthly downloads in the UK of 25 to 30 million. And cumulatively, we're up to about 1.4 billion downloads alone in the UK. And that rises to 3.5 billion when you look outside the UK. And to begin with, I think there was a feeling in the BBC that because of our position in the industry and the marketplace, we should really explore this new technology on behalf of the industry, trialling it for them, as it were. But now we see the real audience appetite to keep it going. And I actually found a quote from Simon Nelson, who was the controller of BBC Radio Music Interactive, when we did that first trial in 2004. And he said he hoped that the new technology would transform the value that we deliver to audiences and make our programmes more accessible for both new and existing audiences. And I think that the figures really show that we did that, actually, and those aims around what we're doing with podcasts still are very, very true today.
How much do we know about people's podcast behaviour?
Well, I think you'll know this, Paul, and probably everyone listening to the podcast, that this is quite a challenging area for us as researchers, because anyone can download and then listen, or actually not listen, to any of our podcasts without us necessarily knowing anything about them. So we currently rely on bespoke surveys that we run in the BBC Audiences team from time to time. We look at other industry surveys. There have been some really interesting ones coming out of the US, Edison Research, for example, in the past couple of years. But probably the one we use most is your own survey, Paul. It's the RAJAR MIDAS survey. Mm-hmm. And that gives us an awful lot of information.
Excellent survey.
It is very good, very useful. And these different data sets, chiefly MIDAS, but other ones, we look at them over time. And we can see some interesting things there. So there are some things about podcast behaviour which are unchanging. For example, the listening tends to be alone. You often do it through headphones. So it's sort of amplifying that intimate relationship that you have with radio. And it's also often used to film moments where live radio isn't yet there or is less convenient to listen to. So the commute to work, you might be on public transport in London on the tube. We can't yet listen to live radio. So it's filling in those gaps where live radio doesn't actually exist at the moment. But then also the data's showing us, in some cases, how podcast behaviour is changing. So I think when we first had the MIDA survey, we saw that downloading and also listening was a PC or laptop-based activity. But now, while the downloading is still happening through the PC laptop, actually the listening shifted to smartphone and mobile devices. And then in terms of demographics, both MIDAS and our own internal surveys just keep showing us the same thing here, that the platform is relatively more important to young people and young listeners and more used by them. So we see it internally, certainly, as an important way of helping future-proof radio.
So do you think that listening to podcasts substitutes for live radio listening?
It's a difficult one to get at, again. It's something that's very interesting to us. Once more, I think there are some clues from the MIDAS survey, and we certainly used to ask people there, how they thought different and new types of audio listening were impacting their live radio listening. And when it came to podcasts, if I remember rightly, the vast majority say it's not impacting that live listen at all. And of the smaller remainder, I think there was a slight preference for people saying that podcasts have actually increased their live radio listening. And I guess that's through introducing them to more radio content that they might not have found, they might not have been available to listen to through their usual live listening windows. I mean, I think a challenge for traditional radio broadcasters in this space is that in a smartphone era, everyone's a potential podcast maker. It's not dissimilar to what you and I are doing here. Without giving the magic away, we've got a phone here which has got a really good mic attached to it. And for the moment, we do know that BBC dominates the podcast landscape. But with the success of content we're seeing coming from abroad, from elsewhere in the UK, we can't take that situation for granted anymore. But for the moment, the way we're looking at it is that podcasts are building on top of our overall radio hours and actually helping the medium transition to a less linear digital future. And actually, one of the benefits of podcasting for many broadcasters is that they can allow you to play with the tone and format of content away from what is quite a constrained still live radio schedule. So you can really experiment. And in the BBC, we've introduced new titles recently, like Seriously, which is a Radio 4 drama piece with a different context around it, and also a best-of podcast called Radio 4 and 4, which is really aimed at existing light listeners, but it's trying to broaden their knowledge of what Radio 4 offers to introduce them again to new content that they might well like but wouldn't bump into in the schedule.
Some good little plugs there, Alison. So, Alison, we're hearing a lot about podcasts at the moment, not least because of the Serial project. And I read only a few weeks ago that there's another edition of Serial, the second session, which is going to focus on Sergeant Bo Bergdahl, the soldier who was held by the Taliban for about 5 years. Is this buzz, this sort of like renaissance of podcasting, is that borne out in the data that you're seeing?
It's interesting. I've seen various commentators in the press refer to 2015 as the year of the podcast. And that's not an unhelpful term, of course. And there is definitely a lot of buzz around this medium at the moment. But actually, yes, in terms of the BBC's own figures, we are seeing them going up. For the last full year of accounting, 2014, we reported 280 million podcast downloads in the UK. And that was up by more than 20% from 2013. And I think there's a mix of things going on there. We are seeing podcasters consuming more podcasts, but actually long-term reach is up as well. And from Rajar data, again, we're seeing up to 3.4 million adults listening in this way every week. And to the point I've made earlier, I think, about future-proofing, we're seeing proportionately more 15 to 24-year-olds podcasting as well. And I think internally in the UK and for the BBC, there's a few things that are contributing to this rise. Firstly, there's the sheer number of podcasts out there now. The BBC at the moment has got 472 live titles that you can get a hold of. That's why you've always got so many to listen to in your list. Then there's the availability of archive material. The likes of Radio 4's Desert Island Discs and the Reef Lectures are just two of them, which allow you to sort of binge listen to a series in the way that you might consume TV box sets. But also then there's the millions of consumers now walking around with smartphones in their pockets who are all gradually realising that they can download audio files to listen to whenever, wherever they want. So while we know that our audience can be unsure as to the data charges, for example, if they want to listen live on the go through mobile devices to the radio, they don't have those same concerns with listening on demand to a podcast.
Do we actually know how big Serial is?
It's the million-dollar question. I wish we knew. Could someone tell us? Does anyone out there know? I mean, there was an article in USA Today earlier in the year, and they quoted a figure of over 80 million downloads since it launched, which, as we know, is different to how many people listen to it. But 80 million downloads are huge. That's since it launched last year in November. We have run our own internal surveys on it because everyone in the BBC keeps asking us how big is Serial. Relatively small versus the sort of population that we survey in the BBC's internal surveys. Some people have heard of it, fewer people have listened to it. But actually, in this instance, I don't think that size matters here, because in the year since it launched, there's no doubt that we have seen renewed interest in the podcast market. Just recently, I don't know if you saw, you mentioned the second Serial, but actually prior to that in September, we had Sky, who were actually blatantly piggybacking the success of Syria with a five-part investigation into Richard Glossop, who's the man who's been on death row for some time in the US. We also saw in March this year BuzzFeed, unlikely as that may seem, entering the podcast market. They had two new titles they launched with. That's now been increased to three. And back in the US, Slate, who are a prolific podcast provider, they've got 14 or so podcasts in their suite. They apparently drive 6 million downloads a month, including the Serial spoiler special. Did you see that one? Mm-hmm. They each week analyse the most recent Serial episode, which is rather like us here doing a podcast about a podcast. Very meta. I think one of the biggest benefits of Serial and its ilk, though, that's really helped to redefine podcasts and possibly speech audio more broadly, they've helped redefine it from what was seen as potentially an older, more traditional format into something that's still intelligent, but just a little bit sexier all of a sudden.
Ah. Alison, one final question. What is next for podcasts?
I think there's plenty of innovation left in this area, but to be honest, Paul, I'm going to keep some of my powder dry for Venice, so you'll have to come along in Venice to hear.
Well, there's an offer I can't refuse. Thank you very much, Alison.